What's up, heretics? Welcome to the Religion of Speed podcast, an automotive news, entertainment, and quote-unquote educational podcast about grassroots racing and car culture, where we give you ways to get out and have fun with cars. I am Matt Overstreet.
And I am Chris Huffman.
I feel like we're drifting farther and farther away from that mission statement in every episode.
I feel like we always touch on it.
Yeah, we touch on it. We might need to change that and update that here pretty soon.
Well, we might have to put diving into philosophical things as
yes.
each thing.
Yeah, this is actually a philosophy podcast disguised as an automotive podcast.
Yeah, we could call ourselves the philosophers of electric cars these days.
I feel like this is a lot of podcasts actually just disguised as an automotive podcast.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, whatever works.
Hey, if people like to listen to it, I'm happy to keep talking.
Right? Oh, man. So, last weekend, we had quite a weekend.
Yeah.
It was grid life.
Man,
finally.
That was awesome.
Yeah, that was your first grid life.
It was, and I've been to races, I've been to drift events, but I've never been to something that just includes everything and mashes it all together. You know, we got to see wheel-to-wheel racing, drifting exhibition, you were competing in the Time Attack.
Yep.
We got to see some cool concerts at night. I mean, vendors everywhere, kind of the best of all worlds.
There was a car show there, albeit a small car show. But there were some legit car builds out there.
Yeah, there was some really cool stuff. That we saw that Ferrari swapped 86. Looked like they finally, I don't know if they got it running, but they got it more pieced together than it was before.
Right. Yeah, you might have seen that on our Slush video. I briefly touched on that. But yeah, it was out now and it was supposed, I guess, done? I never saw it run, but yeah. It looked fully plumbed up and everything.
Yeah, it looked more done. I'd like to see it drive.
Right. I'd like to see it drift.
Yes, absolutely.
You're going to build something like that. Come on. You got to go take it out.
Yeah.
But
gotta
yeah.
some tires.
3 days of just craziness. Well, kind of 2.5. I took off pretty early on Sunday because I was worn out. Man, that's a fucking event. We'll take it out of you. And I didn't even stay there for all two nights.
Yeah, you said you came back Friday night, right?
Yeah, because Friday was like incredibly hot. I think it was in the 90s normally. And then you're in that fishbowl of blacktop, what they call PPIR, surrounded by a bunch of cars that are running. And I don't know if I've sweat that much in a very long time.
I'm glad I just came down on Saturday then.
Yeah, Saturday was a gorgeous day. You picked the perfect day to go.
Yeah, and we even got some rain to keep cooling us down.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, on Friday, I feel like the rain just made things muggy.
Oh.
And yeah, it was not enjoyable. I remember I sat down for like, I think it was the second heat, because I got three heats, right? Three, and one.
Okay.
Yeah, so seven total. I sat down for the second heat to go out there, and I felt sweat drip through, like, from my armpits. Like, I was like, oh, my God.
Wow.
This is too hot.
As soon as you sat in the car.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's too much.
It was too hot. Luckily, my car has AC, so I was sitting in the pit staging area just blasting air conditioning.
Then turning it off and rolling the windows down.
Yeah, that's when I left. Yep, I was making fun of all the guys in the gutted CRXs and stuff. Like, oh man, that's nice and comfortable in here. Yeah. They're just sweating their balls off.
You see, that's how I felt in line for security.
Oh God, yeah, the line for security, that would sounded nuts.
Honestly, I've never had to go through that much security to do anything.
Right.
I've been to Washington, D.C., and I've flown all over the country. I've never had to go through that level of security. There was an hour-long wait in line because they were checking every single car just to get into the parking lot.
These right, yeah, cars, that was just waiting in your car to get into the parking lot.
Yeah, just to get into the parking lot, and these are cars that aren't going into the track.
Right.
So, you know, after we wait for every car to be searched, you then have to go through a metal detector to get into the track, and then there's a second metal detector to go under the tunnel to get into the inside field.
Right.
So it took me 2 hours start to finish from getting there to actually getting into the motorsports festival.
Yeah, it's what I was hearing from people all weekend that were coming in, was that security was just nuts.
Yeah.
And like they had armed policemen patrolling the place the entire time.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure what was going on with that. We had some theories.
I heard some rumor that they had caught someone with an AR-15 in the parking lot, but not that he was brandishing or anything, just had it in his car.
Right.
Which, this is Colorado Springs. So
yeah,
there's going to be an AR-15 in someone's car.
Well, yeah, because the kids from California that we were hanging out with, they were said that.
Yeah.
They're like, well, I don't know why he would have an AR-15. And me and you were just like, I don't know why he wouldn't have an AR-15.
Right,
like,
right.
People just carry that shit around with you.
Yeah, if you're in a conservative area, then people are going to have semi-automatic rifles and handguns. That's just the case. That's
right.
Just the way things are. It is funny though, the people from California couldn't understand it.
No, they're like, but why? Like, why would you need that? And like, well, they don't need it. They just want it.
Right. They want it. It's their right, and they see it as protecting their rights by owning it.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's possible that they were coming in with nefarious purposes, but I doubt it.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It sounds to me like it was a bit of an overreaction.
Yeah. But, you know, then that, what was it, 3 weeks ago now, with All-Stars game in downtown Denver, they caught a bunch of people that possibly were trying to shoot it up. They had a whole bunch of guns and stuff. Although I don't think that was ever even proven that they were going to do that. Although that was a little more suspicious. They had a hotel facing the All-Stars game, like, and there were multiple people with like a ton of firearms and a ton of ammunition. And I guess one of the guys posted on Facebook before, like, he was going through a divorce. He's like, I'm going to go out with a bang or something like that.
Okay, so yeah, that does sound a little worse.
Yeah, so maybe just because of that, they were upping security here, because big event, you know, crowded events are targets at this point, which is welcome to America.
Yep, yeah. And you have to go through so much security that if you manage to sneak a gun in, everyone in there is defenseless.
Right, except the people that were driving, because they didn't search anything for us.
Yeah, I thought that was hilarious. It took me 2 hours to get in the first time, and then you and I went on a beer run, got back in 5 minutes.
Yeah. So there's two entrances to PPIR, because it's a oval track. So you have to go under the track to get into the infield. There's the pedestrian one, which goes under the front straight there.
Okay.
Which is always flooded somehow.
Yeah, it was flooded.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's only one walkway that goes over it, so all the people going in were dry, but anyone who wanted to come out had to wade through the water.
Yeah, and then there's the car entrance to go into the infield, and that's where all the, you know, participants, the drivers, the vendors, the people like that came in. And when I showed up, yeah, I went to the office, I got my credentials, I got back in my car, and I drove towards the infield, and there was a kid just like sitting at that booth by the gate, and I just like put my hand up with the band, and he just waved me in, and there was just no questions. They didn't even look at anything. I could have been bringing in a bomb. They never fucking knew.
Yeah,
you know. But it's hilarious to me that like people coming into that side, tons of security.
Right.
People coming to the other side, zero security.
Like, how dare you just be a spectator?
Right. Yeah. That's just so weird. Like, no, clearly the people that paid money to be here, like, to participate, aren't going to do anything.
Yeah.
But the people that paid a lot of money to be here and spectate, those people, we got to watch out for them.
Right, because people who commit domestic terror attacks never consider that sort of thing.
Right. I mean, most of them do seem like idiots.
It's true. You're not too bright if you're doing stuff like that.
If they were, they probably wouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
Because they know there's consequences, but that's beside the point.
Especially something like a motorsports festival. It's like you're not really, there's no political goal that is forwarded by doing that.
Right.
You know, you're just being an asshole.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, to get back in through the tunnel was just so hilariously easy.
Yeah, yeah. So next year I'm definitely going to be, if I'm not driving myself, I'm going to be part of your pit crew.
Yes, because I think to add people to the crew wasn't all that much. I think it was like $45 or something like that.
Yeah, see, that's awesome. That's less than I paid just to get in.
Right.
So, and sit through 2 hours of security.
So I think, you know, this year I might have a short video coming up on YouTube. I still haven't even got the Pikes Peak video done. I haven't even worked on that for a week and a half. So I need to finish that up. But maybe eventually I'll have a quick little video of some stuff that happened at Grid Life. But honestly, we were there to network a little bit with some people, meet some new people. We met tons of cool people there.
Yeah, I mean, especially comparing it to a pro drift event, just how easy it is to meet these professional drivers.
Right.
You know, I was just standing in a crowd and somebody tapped on my shoulder to get by me, and I turn around and it's Justin Pollock.
Right.
Like, he just needed to squeeze by me to get into the Falcon tire zone. And I'm like, oh my God. You know, Ryan Turk just walked right past us on the way to the bathroom, and you told him his wiper motor was melting.
Yep. Or shit, you know, Bob, I stopped and talked to Bob and Aaron Kaufman was with him.
Yeah.
And we talked about the thing we can't talk about.
Yeah, and he just fist bumped us and drove off in a golf cart.
Right? It's just, yeah, it's so awesome. And besides like the famous people, which, you know, well, we'll get into some of those stories again in a second here. Just the other participants, other racers there were just all super chill,
yeah.
Super cool. You know, and I mean, that's how racing is, though. Like, I feel like people get this idea from watching professional level motorsports, F1, your NASCARs.
Right.
That everybody's kind of a little uptight and, you know, protective and secretive and stuff like that. And at that level where there's that much money on the line, sure.
Right.
At this level where there's no money on the line for the most part, like, no, everybody wants to see everybody else succeed.
Yeah. And I mean, even in Formula Drift, in the actual competition, the drivers are a little bit more protected, you know? Yeah. And like when we were at Pikes Peak, we couldn't get a driver interview with anybody before they were doing their run because they were in the zone.
Right.
Which, you know, completely understand.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when you only get one shot like that,
yeah,
you want to be in the zone.
You get one shot at what is considered the most dangerous race in America.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you want to be in the zone.
Yeah, yeah. But this one, especially with the drifters, because they were just out there doing exhibition runs, having fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Chris Forsberg was out there in his drift taxi.
Yep.
We entered into a raffle to try to get a ride in that drift taxi, but unfortunately, our numbers weren't picked.
Yep, didn't get to ride in that, but just watching the thing go was awesome enough, honestly.
That was really cool. And it was funny because it had its own dedicated drones that just stayed with it.
Yeah. There were a lot of drones out there doing a lot of filming.
Yeah.
Actually, there was a lot of people out there doing a lot of photography, a lot of filming. If you don't follow the Religion of Speed Instagram or Facebook, I've been posting a ton of pictures of Jelly Bean out there. Just of people just taking pictures. And the one, man, that one I showed you of when I was like trying to fight through traffic on... Would that be turn 4?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Or turn 5, I guess it is. The big bank, or not bank. Jesus, carousel.
Yeah, yeah, the carousel. Okay.
You know, that photo just made me look like a damn hero out there.
Yeah, you were in center frame. You were the only car in focus.
Right?
Yeah.
And it really looked like we were out there racing, which is hilarious because we weren't.
Yeah,
it
wasn't wheel to wheel.
Yeah, the car behind me, I think, gave me a point by on that corner. You know, like, it's not wheel to wheel. I was just trying to make my way through some traffic. But, oh, man. It looks cool. That's all that matters.
It does. The wheel-to-wheel racing was awesome to watch.
That was fantastic. Yeah.
Which, that battle between the J-swapped BRZ and that Z
was... That was Chris Forsberg in the Z.
That was Chris Forsberg driving. That makes sense why his lines were so tight.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't realize he was part of the JL. So GridLife does their JLTC, which is their GridLife Touring car,
mm-hmm.
which is their wheel-to-wheel series. So that takes place during the weekend, too. And yeah, I'll let you describe that battle was nuts.
I mean, yeah. So this, there was a J-swapped BRZ and, you know, it was running first place for most of the race. This 370Z that I now know was piloted by Chris Forsberg kept trying to get by him in the corners because with that J-Series V6, the BRZ was able to outgun it on the straights.
And for those who don't know, aren't Honda nerds in this crowd, the J-Series is Honda's V6. Commonly found in like the Odyssey minivan.
Yep.
That they had made it rear wheel drive now in a BRZ.
Yep. And so he ran, this actually was the one out of the Odyssey.
With TL heads, right?
Yep. With TL heads. Yeah. And that exhaust manifold was crazy.
Yeah. That was gorgeous.
But it was the whole time you could see, you know, that the Z deserved the pass just mm-hmm. because his lines were perfect, which now that makes sense because Chris Forsberg grip drives like he drifts, which mm-hmm. is just perfectly by the book.
Right.
Like you could write a textbook based on his technique. And you could see as going into the carousel, the Z was braking later every mm-hmm. time. And coming
off the banking, you could see him catch up.
Yeah.
And then going into the carousel there, you could see him catch up too.
And then as soon as there was a straightaway, the BRZ would pull away a little bit.
Yep.
But we saw the best pass I've seen in a long time. The Z and the BRZ were side by side, and you watched the BRZ put on his brakes at his usual braking zone, and the Z got about half a car length ahead of him before he put on his brakes.
Right.
And then they ended up going side by side into those S's
mm-hmm.
around the carousel and into the S's and finally made his pass.
The BRZ kind of got pushed off track a little bit.
Yeah.
But that was like... The F1 nerds right now are freaking out about the old Hamilton Verstappen pass that happened a few weeks ago where Verstappen got knocked off. But this one was a clean pass. Forsberg and the Z clearly had the line. The BRZ was just trying to defend too much and just had to go off into the dirt.
Yeah.
But Yeah, no, like I don't want to be like, I called it because I'm just so smart. But like anybody who watches racing could have called that, just watching a few laps and just kept seeing that Z in that braking zone just get ever closer and ever closer. I'm like, he's going to get him in that braking zone. One of these laps, if he has enough laps,
yeah,
like right there is where he's going to get him.
And I got that on film. So if we can post that little little portion of best pass ever, that would actually make, I'd probably use that GIF in everything.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's on the GoPro. I should get that on, at least get the clip on Instagram and stuff.
Yeah. Cause that was really cool to see. And I didn't know if he was going to catch him. I knew he was catching him, but I didn't know if there was going to be enough time in the race.
Right.
But it was so close. And as soon as he got ahead of him, the gap was defined.
Yeah. He couldn't keep up because clearly it's so weird that the BRZ was holding the Z up in the twisty sections.
Right?
And yeah. The BRZ was pulling away on the oval start.
It was so weird to see a BRZ outrun anything on a straightaway.
Right. You're just like that, especially as a Z.
Yeah.
You know, because a Z is supposed to be, hey, I make a little more power, but I'm a little heavier.
Right. Right.
But I think the Z just had so much more tire.
And, you know, Chris Forsberg behind the wheel.
Right. And that's a great example of, like, these drifting drivers are good drivers.
Yeah, they have to be. And some, you know, drifters catch a lot of stigma because, you know, they're doing something intentionally that you shouldn't do in a race.
Right.
But when you spend all that time over the limit, you're just absolutely comfortable at the limit.
This is very true. Yeah. Yeah. If this thing starts to slide out, he's like, yeah, I got this. This is what I do for a living.
Yeah. He even drifts in the same car.
Right. Yeah. So, no, the between that part of the JLTC and watching the Miata, that poor Miata.
Yeah. But hey, he was a trooper.
He was.
Yeah.
So like all the cars in the JLTC were pretty fucking fast. And there was this purple Miata that honestly looked pretty well built.
Yeah.
But it just didn't have the horsepower it needed to keep up at PPIR.
You just hear it wide open all the time.
Yeah. So unfortunately, we were taking bets on how many laps it would take to get lapped. Yeah. What was it, like five?
I think it was halfway through the fourth lap.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Miata got lapped by the BRZ and then the Z we've been talking about.
Right. So that is unfortunate, but honestly, I think he was like the crowd favorite. Like every time the Miata came by, everyone was like cheering for him because it's just like you said, he's out there, he's doing it.
Yep, everybody loves the underdog.
Right?
Yep, and he proves that anyone with an NA Miata and a little budget can get out there and race.
I think the rules should allow him to make a lot more power.
Yeah, I wonder what he was running.
Yeah, sounded NA.
Yeah, an NA.
Yeah, NA. And you know those things don't make much power.
Yeah.
Like, I think the most powerful NA that I've ever heard of, actually, no, this was an NB, actually, was like 230 horsepower to the wheels.
Wow, I mean, that's actually really impressive.
No, it was a built motor.
Yeah.
But still, that was like 230, and it was like a, you know, $15,000 engine build.
Wow.
You know, try to get every little power out of that. Or you can just slap a turbo on a Miata and make that no problem.
Yeah, you slap a nice turbo on it for $2,000. Right. And then you're good.
But, you know, some people really like that naturally aspirated feel, especially in that car.
Yeah, I mean, there's something to that. Mm-hmm. I mean, having instant throttle response, not having to wait for a turbo to spool.
Right, especially with, like, individual throttle bodies. And when you get an NA engine like that on the edge, just how it sounds and feels.
Yeah, that like, sound.
Right, I get it. But it's just like, I don't think I could spend that money, unfortunately.
It's so hard to justify.
Right.
Yeah. Because when Boost exists,
yeah,
for all of its caveats, and you can make not only the usable power, but a lot more torque than you could spending $15,000 building your NA motor.
Right.
You know, it's hard to sell it to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, you know, the old guys always used to say, there's no replacement for displacement. And then I think they just all threw those shirts in the garbage. And now every muscle car guy is running turbos, you know?
Yeah, it's funny. There's Turbo 4 versus LS, and then there's Turbo LS.
Yeah, and then it's like, oh, well, we can't touch that, clearly.
Yeah.
Although, what is that? The Ultima drift car. What does he call that?
So that's the drift taxi?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's got a VR38.
Yeah, but what was the name for it, though? Do you remember? It's like the Ultimax or Ultimaniac or Ultima.
Oh, I can't remember the name for it, but yeah, it was...
The Ultimatum? That would have been the
Ultimatum. One. I think that might have been it.
I don't think that was it, but that should have been it.
Yeah, that should be it.
I don't remember what it was called. Either way, but yeah, that has a Skyline engine in it.
Yeah.
Or a GTR engine, not a Skyline engine. They aren't Skylines.
They're not Skylines. They're too fancy.
Yes. No, the Skyline is the G platform.
Yeah.
G35, G37, now the, what is that, the Q50?
Oh, did that take the place?
Yeah. I think it's the Q50, or is it the Q40?
I'm not sure, because they stopped tagging the displacement to the number.
Right.
So the number just feels meaningless
and
now.
And they're all Q.
Yeah. So I don't under... Yeah, and the letter Q always rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah, I just thought about that. So does this mean Nissan is involved in QAnon?
Maybe. Secretly. Only Infiniti, though.
Only Infiniti,
Those are the conspiracy nuts within Nissan.
Right, they make good cars, though.
They do.
Anyways, yeah, that Altima, that had a... I think it's a 4.2-liter bored-out VR motor.
Okay.
With two turbos. And I think Chris Forsberg said it's built to make, like, 2,500 horsepower.
Wow.
But they have it turned down to like 1,500.
Which is still way more than you need.
This is ridiculous.
And if I'm not mistaken, I don't think that thing's actually legal for a Formula D competition.
No, it's just an exhibition thing.
Yeah, because it's just a tube chassis car. But it's cool that they built that.
It's not a tube chassis car.
I thought that it's tube chassis with Altima body panels.
No, it was there's actual parts. I mean, it's not much anymore, but there is actually some left of an actual Altima underneath there.
Wow. That's bonkers.
Right? Like I said, it ain't much from what I've seen, but it's like the roof, I think, maybe, you know?
Maybe the roof and some of the fender.
Maybe some door pillar somewhere.
Yeah. It's like, it's got Altima stuff.
Yeah, it's an Altima.
I love that they put the dash in the back so the fans can see what's going on with the engine.
Right, because the whole point is to give fans a ride.
Yeah.
You know, and then they can see this, the thing bouncing off the rev limiter. They can see the wheel speed and stuff, the entry speeds they're going in at. Scare them even more.
I really want to ride in that thing.
Right? I do wish we could have won that. That would have been awesome.
Well, we just have to keep entering to win.
Although, I had to tell the Valvoline people that I run Amsoil.
Well, you were their competition.
Right, yeah. No, like, what's his name? I forget.
Ben.
Ben with the from Gears and Gasoline with that Civic, you know, he's sponsored by Valvoline, and so was that Altima is also sponsored by Valvoline. So, the whole thing, you know, it's the Valvoline booth to sign up to take a ride in the Altima, and they ask you all these questions like, oh, what kind of oil do you run? And I had to be like, I run Amsoil because it's better than your shit. I didn't say that last part, but I was polite.
You were pretty unapologetic. It was funny.
Yeah. I mean, whatever. I like Amsoil.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, I lied to him. I told him I run Valvoline because I wanted to ride in that damn drift taxi.
What, you thought that was going to give you like an extra entry?
I hoped.
They're like, oh, this guy. Yeah, I know.
I got an extra entry for having an advanced auto parts account.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny because I forget. Yeah, the Gears and Gasoline guys are also advanced. So,
yeah.
We need some sponsors.
Sponsors would be nice.
It would be. Yeah. But I want to sidetrack a little bit. We'll come back to grid life. Because I was thinking about this earlier. So I told you I watched Bo Burnham's Inside earlier. Yeah. And I literally had to go for a walk after I watched that because it was like one of those things you watch and you're like, I need to go for a walk.
You know? Like I need to get into a different headspace.
Yeah. But everybody knows I'm kind of anti-capitalist. Like I just don't like having to make my living off advertising and stuff like that. You know, I don't like having to like sell yourself basically to do the thing you love to do.
Yeah.
Or promote things you don't believe in and stuff like that. Not that I'm saying like the Gears and Gasoline guys don't believe in their sponsors or anything like that. But I just got thinking like what, because Bo did this whole special like in his own time, you know, in his room all by himself. There wasn't anybody funding it. And just like, this is very like artsy person. Like, oh, I can't sell myself. You know, my art has to speak for itself, man, type of bullshit. But I got thinking about, like, what does that mean for religious speed going forward? You know? And I was like, do we want to do a lot of advertising? Do we want to, like, basically, what is our goal? Do we want to be these big name guys? Or do we want to keep to our roots and keep doing this shit?
I mean, I certainly don't want to compromise our integrity.
Right.
But I can't ignore the fact that having a big sponsor allows us to do more things and create more content.
Right.
I mean, you and I aren't being able to spend, you know, 2 weeks doing a 50-state road trip in FDR X7s.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, we don't have the funds for that.
Right. But, you know, Advanced Auto Parts and Valvoline allow them to do that.
Right.
And, you know, it's maybe I wouldn't be able to fully go along with saying that Valvoline is the best motor oil in the world, just so that they could do that.
But right.
It would make it easier to swallow. It's like, oh, well, here's your K-swapped RX-7. Go on a road trip.
You're like, oh, well, I love Valvoline now.
Yeah.
I drink this stuff.
It's like, I actually do love Valvoline. Not because of your oil, but because you're giving me all this money.
Right. Yeah, you're like, I actually drink this stuff. They're like, no, don't, yeah. Don't say that.
Don't drink it. Maybe that's the key. Over-endorse.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Valvoline is great. Feed it to your baby.
Like, no, don't say that. Don't say that. But no, I was just thinking that because I wanted to, you know, make it public that, like, this is what... I don't want to ever do anything in private and be like, this, like, oh, they're just, like... They're all about the money now. It's like,
yeah,
no, but if you do hear advertising on here in the future, like, I would just hope that, you know, it's stuff we stand by,
yeah,
you know, that we have vetted, that, you know, we believe will add something to your, you know, your automotive life. You know, yeah. If I want to advertise any sort of automotive brands, then it better be something that I actually believe in.
Right.
So
we're not going to get on here and plug CVT transmissions or right. Pittsburgh torque wrenches.
Right. I mean, clearly we have no problem saying bad things about even things that are popular. So right. As our depression cast, which wasn't all that much of a depression cast, but
yeah, but we can always do another depression cast if a sponsor were to do something unsavory.
Right. So
I know we're probably scaring off sponsors right now.
Yeah, maybe, but that we don't want those people.
Yeah.
Well, like, if the only thing, if you just want us to say nice things about you, but you don't actually offer anything of substance.
Yeah.
Then why do you exist?
To make money.
To make money.
And that's it.
Yeah, exactly. And I just don't want to be a part of that system.
Yeah.
You know?
I get that. Be the change you wish to see in the world.
Right. Which is also probably going to make us less, quote unquote, successful in the long run. But yeah.
If you go to your grave with your ethics, then you've gone to your grave a rich man.
This is, I suppose. I mean, no, but that's a very nice thought.
Rich is subjective.
Yes, I know what you meant. But no, because, like, Bo Burnham's thing got me thinking about that, and then we'll go back to Grid Life now. Like, I had, like, a hangover after Grid Life, and not from drinking beer, although that was true, too. I definitely had that because Saturday night, I think I was up till like 2.
Okay. Yeah.
And I slept in my car for 5 hours and got woken up by them loading up the fucking Broncos.
You got woken up by a trophy truck?
By trophy truck. Yeah. Cause they were loading those on the trailer. So, that was, you know, I was definitely hungover that day, but no, after the event, I was like bummed out and I didn't look it up, but I'm just like, this must be what people are like after, like, a big music festival.
Oh, yeah.
Or, like, Coachella or Burning Man or something like that. Because it was just, holy shit, it was, like, unfiltered humanity.
Yeah.
You know, we were just hanging out, doing the things we love.
Yeah.
With other people who love the things we love. You know, everybody was super cool. I didn't have to pretend to be anybody. Everybody was actually interested that we had, like, a podcast and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. We met some genuine fans.
Right.
Yeah.
Or people that were like, I'm going to listen.
Yeah.
Because, hey, that's cool that you're doing this. Unlike most people that are like, you podcast about cars? Like, why? Right. You know?
Yeah, because at Grid Life, everyone is there for that.
Right.
Yeah, if you try to explain
Not everyone. There were some people that showed up for the concerts later who had no idea there was a car thing going on.
Which blows my mind. It's like, how do you look at that online and be like, oh, I'm just going to go to this concert? What is it? I don't know, something called Grid Life.
Right.
It's like, you're not going to look up what the thing is that you're going to?
Right. It's a 3-day festival. I want to be there for my one band who's going to play for 1 hour on one night.
And we're going to drive 10 hours.
Right. But hey, whatever.
It got more people there.
It got more people there. Maybe they have a slight interest in, hey, what is this car thing? Like, yeah. This is kind of cool.
That's true.
You know?
That's true. And there's crossover. People probably heard music that they wouldn't have otherwise heard who just showed up for the car event.
This is true. Yeah. And, you know, Religion of Speed, that's kind of what one of our things is. We want to get more people into this sport, into this madness we call a sport, I should say.
Yeah.
You know?
Into this just willful commitment to having less money for the rest of your life.
Right. It's not a smart habit, but, but yeah, no. And just being there and hanging out with those people, that also made me, like, take a step back of, like, because I was really concerned about growth of the channel and growth of this and, you know, get some sponsors, do big money thing. And I was like, no, the reason I wanted to do this in the first place was to hang out with cool people, That's why I have you on, because I think you're cool. Otherwise, thank you. I wouldn't be hanging out with you. I think people know that about me. If I don't like you, I just don't hang out with you.
I mean, that's better for your mental health, to be honest. It's if you're not forced to hang out with somebody.
Yeah.
Because it's not like, you know, we used to be coworkers, but we're not coworkers anymore.
Right.
We still hang out.
Right.
Yeah. We're not forced to do it anymore.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know. My friends aren't just from proximity, you know? Right. Like, there's a reason I like my friends. But the whole reason Religion of Speed, when I first started it, was an excuse to do car stuff with my friends or talk about cars with my friends. To make more friends from the car circle by doing the interviews with people, which I really want to get back to. I just need to change up this recording setup a little bit. We need another microphone.
Yeah.
You know, and to just go do cool stuff. And I think I got a little lost in like, no, it needs to be big. We need to be doing big things. It's like, no, we just need to be back to our roots and back to our roots of, we've been doing this for like a year. Like, oh no, we've drifted too far.
We've become so jaded. But you know, it's, that's a good thing, because if that's our goal, then we're meeting it,
right.
We're fulfilling it, and we're a success.
Yeah. And you know, the kids we met at, Grid Life there from California.
Yeah.
They were super cool, you know, and hopefully, I mean, they were already kind of in the car scene and everything, but
yeah, but hopefully they stay in it, because it's something that a lot of people grow out of when they get older.
Yeah, this is true. It's just been a weird week for me, that hangover from Grid Life of just like, man, I'm bummed that I just wanted to be there again.
Maybe we should just follow automotive festivals around.
Right.
I don't know what we do in the wintertime. Maybe snowmobile. Well,
there's plenty of states that don't get snow.
Okay, yeah, we can just go to the south.
Yeah, that's fine. Or California. Yeah. They still race in the winter.
Yeah, there we go. Know?
But yeah, and then it's crazy because I did see people on Instagram that were there at Grid Life racing, and this weekend were somewhere else racing. And I'm like, oh my God.
That could be our life.
Like, that'd be amazing. I couldn't do that and work a full-time job.
Yeah.
But like, that'd be amazing just to do that circuit.
Yeah.
Hang out with those awesome people.
So, I've wanted to follow Formula Drift as a fan and see every event in the season.
Yeah.
I think that would be amazing. I mean, let alone driving in it. If I'm ever able to drift at that level, that would be a dream.
That would be amazing.
But even if I could just afford to go see every event one season.
It's like people that used to follow the Grateful Dead.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd hop in a... Well, Volkswagen buses are too expensive. I'd hop in a Ford Transit van or Econoline.
Right.
And follow races around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just be a track bum.
Is that a thing? That's got to be a thing, right? Somebody has to do that.
Yeah, I think there's track rats somewhere.
It's got to be.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. Like, I want to be out doing more of that stuff. And I wasn't concerned about making content while we were there. I was just concerned about meeting people.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
Yeah, I was actually kicking myself a little bit because I got to talk to Dai Yoshihara and Ryan Turk, and I didn't record any of it.
We were joking about that.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you met Dai Yoshihara. Did you get it on film? No.
Nope. I just walked up to him. He was pulling a duffel bag out of the trunk of an Evo 9. And I'm like, hey, Dai, you know, and we started talking and we talked about Pike's Peak.
Mm-hmm.
He said that the issue with his car wasn't the headlights. It was just some random thing that threw the ECU into limp mode.
Which makes me feel better.
It actually does.
Because if it was like, hey, one of those last minute decisions of, hey, let's unplug these headlights to save some power, and that screwed it up, it's like, ah, shit. Like,
right.
We shouldn't have done that, you know, but if it's a random thing, you're like, well, shit. I guess that's not our fault. There's really
nothing we could have done.
Right.
And I asked him, like, is turn 14 going back to Pike's Peak next year? He said, I hope so. So it's, you know, it sounds like there was a lot of disappointment from the sponsor for that, which, you know, I understand. They spent all this money. They came out bigger than, honestly, they came out as big as some of the manufacturer teams.
They did. That was a huge team effort there.
Yeah. They had the big trailer. They had a meal and hospitality area.
Right.
I mean, Porsche didn't even set that up. So I hope that turn 14 comes back, because I want to see Dai Yoshihara kick that mountain's ass.
Yes. Yeah. I think that car might have taken the fastest time, because in practice it was super fast.
And it would have been at least up there instead of the slowest time, you know, north of a DNF.
Right. Yeah, it was, unfortunately. So if you do want to, you know, that's where you as a fan can like contribute to that. If you want to see Dai out there again, go show him your support on social media and, you know, let him know that you want to see him and turn 14 come back with that car next year. Because that's if the sponsor sees that there's a demand and that people are going to pay attention,
right,
then they're going to keep giving them money.
Right.
The whole point is eyeballs. It doesn't matter if you win or lose. If you're still getting eyeballs, that's the whole point.
Yeah, and Turn 14 Distribution provides most of the parts to, you know, whatever your automotive site of choice is.
Yeah.
You know, depending on what you build, there's always a niche site. I spend a lot of time on Injuku because I have a 240. Hmm. You know, there's K-Series parts if you have a Honda.
Yep.
There's Z1 Motorsports if you have a Z.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of those guys actually get their parts from Turn 14 Distribution because they don't sell directly to people. They sell to vendors. So Turn 14 really does have a lot of their market at these events. And, you know, even at Pikes Peak, you know, there are going to be fans who show up there who would ultimately give Turn 14 business.
Right. I mean, I do find it kind of weird that Turn 14 even does sponsored stuff like that. Because like you said, you can't go just buy directly from Turn 14. You have to buy through a vendor. So it does seem kind of weird that they would do that. But hey, I'm glad they are.
Maybe they're doing it to market to the vendors.
True. Yeah.
Because, you know, it's kind of like, you know, I don't believe in trickle down economics, but maybe it's a trickle down fandom thing, you know?
Yeah.
If I see a 240 tearing it up, or, well, actually, I mean, that Honda motor.
Oh,
yeah. That took one of the top spots
with
a Skunk 2 intake that you could get off K-Series parts.
Right.
That ultimately would have originated at Turn 14 Distribution. You know, that's still business for them.
Right.
So it's just not direct from the fan.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, like, it doesn't really matter to me how they're making their money as long as they exist. So
yeah, I want to see him field. I want to see good drivers, you know, have a ride. I want to see them have a ride in these races that I like to watch.
Yeah. I mean, they're supporting motorsports at the end of the day. So
exactly.
And it is mostly big name stuff, but you know, that stuff sells. Like, I guess I'm just trying to see what Turn 14 has to gain from doing it themselves. Like, you would think they would want to, like, go through one of their vendors, like, give the vendor money to go sponsor something.
Which a lot of the vendors, I mean, I know Injuku sponsors a drift car.
Right.
So I know that a lot of the vendors sponsor events in their, or cars in their own series, but I wonder, they probably don't have the same resources Turn 14 does.
True.
To be able to field a Tesla race car.
Right. Turn 14 is big enough to have that kind of money and clout. And
they can show resources up with an RV and double-decker workshop trailer.
Right.
And they can hire Daiyoshi Hara.
Yeah. And if you're going to hire anybody to drive your car and be a personality, Dai is up there.
Right? I mean, he's so approachable.
He is.
You know, you can just go up and talk to him, and he's never like, he seems low energy even. He's just there, and he listens to you, and he just answers your question.
Like, yeah. And another example of drifter turned grip driver that is super successful.
Yeah, he's a multi-discipline driver.
Right.
Which I really respect, because I like to grassroots drive in as many disciplines as I can.
Right.
Especially after seeing that rally racing going on outside Grid Life.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, I got to get a beaten up Outback, and I got to get out there and do that.
I was kind of sad Sierra Cars wasn't there this year. So the 2 years ago, first year Grid Life at PPIR, Sierra Cars, they make those little cross cart buggy looking things.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They were out there, and you could just pay like $40 or something to go do a rally lap in one of the Sierra cars.
Oh, that would have been awesome.
And I didn't get over there that first year to do it. And I was like, oh man, if they're there this year, I'm going out there. I'm doing a lap for sure. Cause I kind of want them. Part of my brain was like, I'm going to do so good, and they're going to sign me as a driver, which isn't going to happen because I've never been in the car before, but
it's like, they're going to discover my talent.
Yeah, they weren't there this year, so I couldn't go do it, unfortunately.
It was cool to watch, though, because while you spent an hour waiting in line for security, the rally track was right next to the line.
Well, at least you had that to look at.
So I got to, you know, see a dust cloud and then see, like, oh, what kind of car is putting that out? And it was always something random.
You
would think it'd be nothing but Subarus, and there were a fair share. But this guy drove by me in a Z3 coupe.
What?
Yeah, a Z3 coupe with the plastic, you know, the plastic racing windows with the little cat flap slots and everything.
Really?
And he was out there on the dirt tearing it up.
That was awesome.
Yeah, I'm like, those things are so rare. That is so ballsy that you would not, like, not just track it, but rally drive it.
Yeah. I saw one of those on the road the other day.
Really?
And I was like, oh, hey, it's Huffman's favorite car. And then I saw it, and it was like some older lady driving it. There's, and it was an M.
It was an actual M.
It was an M.
Yeah, so those are unobtainium.
Right. Right. And I was just, it was just so, it's always so weird to me to see an older lady in a car that's just so clearly an enthusiast darling.
Yeah.
You know, like, because there's two options. One, she has no idea what she's driving.
Right.
Or two, she's the coolest old lady in the world.
See, I'm inclined to believe the latter.
It's got to be, right?
Because no one who still drives a Z3 M Coupe,
right,
they know what it is. Because they've been told every time they hit a stoplight.
Right. This is true. They've had kids like you, kids, quote unquote. Yep. Sorry, no offense.
Hey, to her? Yeah.
Yeah. Come all up and be like, oh relative. My God.
Yeah. Every time I see one of those, even a non-M, which ironically, I see more M's than non, mm-hmm. just because I think the regular Z3 coupes are just starting to kind of fade away.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't make as many of the coupes as they did the convertibles, and the M's were, you know, the ultimate version of it. And
I wonder if some of the non-M versions are getting sacrificed to keep the M's on the road.
I could see that.
Like body panels and stuff.
Because, yeah, finding a rear quarter or a hatch for one of those has to be a nightmare.
Right.
You know, you can get the hood off a Roadster.
Yeah. But the rest of it is all proprietary.
Yeah, it's all, and I just love those cars.
It was such a, like, quirky thing for them to do.
Right. Let's make not only a Roadster into a coupe, but let's make it a hatchback.
Yeah.
Keep it rear wheel drive. And for 2 years and 2 years only, let's put the E46 M3 engine in it. And right. You know what? Just to screw with everybody, let's import less than 1,000 of them to America. just because we're going to make the best model ever.
Right.
BMW loves to do that. They make the best car mm-hmm. they could possibly think of, and they sell it in the lowest production numbers.
Yeah, what was the 1M or M? No.
The 1M Coupe.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's considered widely by most automotive enthusiasts to be the best M car ever made.
Right.
Because it was the pinnacle of the old technology before they started going with electric power steering and piping in engine noise through the speakers.
Right.
You know, it was a real car. And
they made how many of them?
So I think it was just over 3,000.
Yeah.
And less than 500 made it to the U.S.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Only available in three colors. Black, white, or that orange that was on all the magazines.
Yeah, I think the moment you bought that car, it raised itself in value.
Oh, yeah. They've been appreciating nonstop.
Right.
Because it was a $45,000 MSRP.
Yeah, that's right. I remember it was super fucking cheap.
Yeah. And when last time I looked, they were approaching 80. Because I know that the... I thought it was funny because the Aston Martin V8 Vantage and the 1M Coupe were meeting each other in the depreciation cycle. It's like, so ooh, 70 what would I rather grand, have? You know, it'd be a tough call.
It would be a tough call because that BMW is amazing. Well, from everything I understand, it is amazing.
I've never been lucky enough to drive one, sadly.
Right, but an Aston.
Right.
Just to own an Aston.
But it is the V8. It's not the V12 Aston.
That's okay.
And their 0 to 60s are basically the same. They're in the fours.
That's kind of a surprise. Yeah, see, not surprising. That's just...
So you've got an NA V8 with Ford electronics, or you've got a twin turbo inline six with BMW reliability.
I know enough about BMWs these days. I think I'd take the BMW. I could maintain that and keep it in okay shape.
You could keep it on the road.
Yeah, the Aston, if it has any sort of Ford electronics left over at this point.
Yeah, which that era had them.
Did it?
Yeah, because that was in the that was before Tata Motors bought them.
Okay, then yeah, I'm not sure I want that because that's old Ford electronics. It's always funny. I always make fun of Fords and people are like, you drive a Ford. I'm like, kinda.
It's a European Ford.
Yeah, it's a lot different. Yeah.
And the Ford parts on it, you're having to replace with junkyard window switches and stuff.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah, I did after Grid Life coming back. My tires were completely shot. They still are. Still driving on those. And then I developed a clicking noise.
Okay.
And I was like, huh, wonder what that is. And I thought it was my passenger side axle because I figured at PPIR, when you get up through the road course section and you go up onto the banked oval to start the oval section,
yeah,
it's a pretty hard transition, honestly. So you're turning right super hard. Getting on the gas, which in my car is getting some wheel spin because it still does understeer pretty good.
Yeah.
And I'm probably getting on the gas too soon, honestly. I think I need to try not to get on the gas so soon.
But it's hard to get yourself to go slower, to go faster.
It is. Especially when you're
more throttle, less time.
Yeah. Especially when you're going for time.
Yeah.
Anyways, so you're at lock, your wheel's spinning, and then your outside wheel is hitting that bump going up.
Yeah. When your suspension's already loaded.
Right. And I was like, oh man, yeah, I probably smoked that axle. Come to find out, just the brakes.
Just like what, the caliper, like your pads were worn out?
So I was still had the race pads on there, which, mm-hmm. by the way, G-Lock R10 pads. G-Lock, if you want to support this show, let me know because I will support you. Those brake pads were amazing. Like lap after lap going down from the oval into the infield there, like 120 to about, I don't know, 50 miles an hour, just hard on the brakes. I was outbraking everybody in my class.
Nice.
The car got a little squirrely. It needs some work there, but it would just outbrake everything, and the brakes held up great. And the pads hardly wore. It was like I got plenty of more races on those.
That's impressive. Now, are you still planning on taking those off for street driving,
though? Oh, yeah. They're sitting in a box at the shop right now. I couldn't stand it anymore. They're so noisy. You do not street drive these things. So on top of the squealing that had just developed normally, it started clicking for some reason. I don't know if it's because I have slotted rotors, It was like grabbing the pad and like clicking it inside the...
Like maneuvering it inside the floating caliper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I kind of thought maybe that was it, but I ordered an axle, I got an axle, I swapped pads just because I was tired of the noise, and the clicking noise went away. So I guess I didn't need an axle.
But you have one now.
I have one, but the reason I bring that up is just because like I abuse the shit out of this car, and driveline-wise... I haven't replaced hard like anything.
Yeah, it's holding up. That's impressive. Great. You do drive it really hard.
Yeah. And it's got 120,000-ish miles on it at this point, and it's been rock solid. I don't know what other Ford you can say that about.
I definitely can't say it about mine.
Right? And that wasn't even... I was going to say that wasn't abused, but then I remember who owned it.
Yeah. Yeah, my family put that thing through the ringer before I bought it from them, and it's had a hard life. It's got 84,000 miles on it.
Yeah.
97.
Only 84,000 on that.
Yeah.
God. And it's so rusted.
Yeah. East Coast car.
Right.
Yeah.
A long time ago on the Religion Speed Instagram, I may need to like bring this back up as a memory. We were doing the brakes on your truck, and that brake hose just snapped like nothing.
Yeah, you just wiggled the caliper, and I remember you looked at me like, dude, I swear I didn't do anything. Right? And I'm like, dude, I saw. You just wiggled the caliper, and the hose just fell off.
It just fell off.
And a bunch of rust fell out.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just plugged up. The only thing holding that thing together was rust at that point.
Yeah, oxidation. That's why my brakes felt so weird.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm glad I don't have to deal with that anymore out here in Colorado.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, my clutch line rusted and broke off, but that was probably all the East Coast rust. And then the first time I had to plow it through 5 feet of snow,
right?
Probably just finished it off.
Your truck was like, what's happening?
What are you doing to me?
A lot of clutch pressure right now. I don't know what's happening. I don't like this.
Yeah, it just blew up and clutch fluid just dumped all over the parking lot at work. Which I'm going to have to get another line custom made to get that to run.
Yeah, you were saying you can't find that line anywhere now.
Yeah, which I'm glad it turned out to not be the slave cylinder itself, which means the bell housing doesn't have to come off.
Right.
Which is great. But that line, I've been out of production. I got the OEM part number. Ford doesn't make it anymore. And as far as I can find, no aftermarket company makes it, which basically leaves me with custom fabrication or used. And after I've seen how this one held up, I don't want to go used.
Right, yeah. I mean, out here, even out here, I think, just the way Ford designed those lines, because we were looking at that, it has that like foam bullshit over top of where the rubber line transitions to the metal line.
Right.
Where that crimp is.
And it just catches all the moisture.
Yeah, it has this piece of foam on there, just captures the moisture and just causes it to rust like crazy.
Yeah, it's like, let's coat your metal in a sponge.
Yeah, I don't understand what their thinking was there.
Yeah, and then we'll submerge it in water and over and over again. Everything will be fine.
Yeah, it'll be fine. Because, your truck, I mean, it's not even from a salt state.
No, we barely ever got snow.
Yeah.
Like, that truck has seen more snow in the 2 years I've lived in Colorado than it saw in the entirety of the rest of its life.
Which, luckily, we don't really use salt here, so
we
don't worry about that as much.
Use that mag chloride.
Yeah.
Which I should be washing off the underside of it more often.
Yeah, it's still corrosive, just not quite as bad. They also started using salt brine here on the highways, but I guess the salt brine isn't as corrosive as just rock salt.
Okay. Okay.
Because, yeah, in Michigan, they just put fucking rock salt on the road.
Yeah.
And then that gets kicked up and breaks your windshield.
Yeah, which is, it's abrasive in addition to being corrosive.
Right.
It's like, not only will this rust your metal, but it'll scratch the paint that protects it from rusting.
Yeah.
And then it'll rust the metal underneath.
It's a great combination. I still don't understand why they use salt on the roads. I mean, just, there's better ways to do it. I mean, granted, Colorado doesn't get as much ice as Michigan does. You know, once you're around the Great Lakes like that, that lake effect is real and you just get a lot of moisture. It just turns to ice. So that's a lot harder to deal with than driving in snow, honestly.
I am surprised at how little ice kind of plays in here.
Yeah.
Even when it should, when the roads are, they should be completely impassable. You know, I've towed through Denver in an ice storm.
Yeah.
And, you know, it slipped a little bit, but everything was fine.
Right. I think it's just because we get so much sun here, so the blacktop just absorbs a lot of heat during the day. So even if it does snow or rain or sleet or whatever, there's enough latent heat in the ground to keep it from just freezing over completely.
Yeah, and the snowpack usually melts before we get another snow.
Right.
So we don't get that kind of somewhat permafrost layer that builds up underneath it.
Yeah, meanwhile, in Michigan, it's like 7 months of darkness. Oh, you just don't see the sun. Just cloudy and miserable for like 7 months.
Yeah.
And then the sun comes out and it's 100 degrees and 90% humidity. And you're like, yay.
I can see the sun, but I'm being eaten alive by mosquitoes. I want to go back inside.
I'm sorry to all my Michigan peeps that still live in Michigan that I'm just destroying that state.
Hey, if you're being truthful, I mean, in Tennessee, it's gray from October to February.
Right.
You know, and it's funny because, you know, I'm used to that. And I come out here and it's like we were talking about earlier. People in Colorado don't know how to deal with a lack of vitamin D.
Yeah, no. Yesterday was nuts. It was like, so yesterday, if you're not in Colorado and not on our schedule, this, you could be listening to this a year from now and be like, I don't know what the fucking weather was yesterday, guys. it was a rainy and cloudy, one of those rare days that we get. And yeah, like me and Kayla, my girlfriend, went to the grocery store and it was chaos there. Like the first thing we saw was a pack of like pre-made salad in with the cookies. So somebody made a choice there.
Somebody decided not to make the healthy choice. Yeah. They were so close too.
They did. They made it. They're like, I'm getting the salad. I'm going to eat this salad. Oh, fuck. Those snickerdoodles look good.
Oh, that is hilarious. I would have loved to see that. Just the person just standing there with the salad in one hand and a box of cookies in the other. Just deciding.
Oh, and then, yeah, there was like a single glass bottle of Pepsi in with the cookies. We walked somewhere else. There was just like stuff everywhere. The thing that topped it off though was there was like the back to school section and then there's like some candy section behind that. And in that candy section next to like these little plastic mason jars full of Runts.
Oh yeah.
That they're not real mason jars because children, I guess.
Yeah.
Was a rotisserie chicken and Dove ice cream bars just sitting on the floor.
So someone decided they don't need dinner and dessert.
No, they just need want candy. They just want candy. And then like we get up to the checkout and the checkout is just chaos. And I'm like, it's usually not like this. And I'm just like, I don't know if people can handle rain.
Yeah.
But like the really sun's gone. I don't panic. I don't know.
And they're terrified to drive in it, which is hilarious because in the snow, people ride my ass.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, well, why aren't you moving faster? I'm like, because it's snowing.
Right.
Because it's going to take me 30 feet to stop and I'm doing 2 miles an hour.
Right. Well, and to be fair, you were driving a BRZ on summer tires in the snow like non-native.
To be fair, you're right. I had my Tennessee tags and I stuck out like a sore thumb. But even in my truck, I'm not going to run up on someone's ass in the snow.
No, it's stupid.
Because you can't stop.
Right.
But in the rain, everybody gives you wide berth. People go way too slow. Everybody stays home. It's like, you guys know there's more friction in the rain, right?
Right. It's like, really not that big of a deal if you have any sort of good tire.
Well, I don't even have good rain tires. I'm still running my Falcon RT 660s.
I will say, unless there's a ton of standing water,
yeah,
like RT660s are actually pretty good
in the rain.
Yeah, they're not too bad. I mean, I raced on them in the rain a few weeks ago at PPIR, a month ago, whatever it was.
Yeah, right before the hill climb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that honestly went pretty well.
Okay, that's surprised. Pretty impressive.
Now, the way they're sitting now with pretty much zero tread, they're pretty much racing slicks at this point. I'm a little more cautious out there on the rain. But
yeah, yesterday I was driving through, you know, like puddles. There was like a kind of a monsoon. Water was standing all over the road. I had no grip issues.
Yeah.
It was just fine. But you know, the Jeeps and all terrain vehicles around me are freaking out.
Right.
It's raining.
Yeah, I never really understood that. It's like, especially like a passenger car on good all seasons.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you're fine.
It's like, you're in a Subaru Outback. Right. You can get home.
Yeah.
Trust me.
You're going to be okay. It's going to be okay. Yeah. No, this is going to be a little inside baseball, but for whatever reason, that storm hit all of Denver super hard. Like, I saw things of flooding and whatnot, or roads being flooded.
Yeah.
Here, we barely got any rain.
Yesterday?
Yeah, just in Lakewood. I don't know. It like went around Lakewood. It was the weirdest fucking thing.
That's crazy. I went to Federal, which is just an exit down from it.
I know. I was watching the radar. I'm like,
yeah,
it's, I see it. I see the rain. It's just not here.
I was driving down Federal. That's where all the standing water was.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
That's what happens with the mountains here and weather. It's just always very unpredictable, strange.
Localized.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is funny. It just seems like you don't get inclement weather here in Lakewood.
No, not really. Although a couple years ago, or before we moved in here, apparently this place got rocked by hail.
Oh, okay.
So I am always cautious about that. And I don't have any covered parking here. So I do try to like find a tree at least.
Yeah.
Park under a tree that'll like slow down the hail a little bit.
So the dents aren't quite as deep.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I remember I was really sad. 2010, I think, there was a big hailstorm in Knoxville, Tennessee, which is, hail is, at least damaging hail is pretty uncommon there.
Yeah.
And my WRX got completely golf balled. Yeah, the whole thing was beveled. So I replaced the hood, so I didn't have to see the dents. I saw carbon fiber. And
there you go.
And it was fine.
Yeah,
I just told everybody I beveled it so it would go faster.
Yeah, it's like
a golf
ball. And I
stopped washing my car.
There you go.
Because when it's not shiny, you can't see the dents.
True. And plus, I mean, it's already dented, so.
Right.
I was watching this thing. It was actually a mountain biker. The guy building mountain bikes, you know, like out of parts and stuff like that, just piecing one together. Because I do want to get into mountain biking a little bit. So I was just watching some YouTube videos. But he's like, one thing I always do whenever I build a new bike is I go outside, I throw it into the gravel. Because once it's got a scratch on it, then I don't feel bad about like tearing ass downhill.
You know, that's actually kind of brilliant.
Right?
Yeah. That's honestly one reason I love driving my rusty 240 and I've been so hesitant to paint it.
Yeah.
It's just because it's like, well, if I scratch it, then whatever.
Right.
Yeah. There's not any clear coat on it anyway.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's like with the Fiesta, there was, when I first bought it, I was keeping it nice and clean and stuff like that. And then like, I can't remember what was the first thing that happened, but I got a decent little scratch on it or something. And I was like, well, oh, well,
yeah,
it's a track car now.
Now it's a track car. Yeah.
The biggest thing on the Fiesta right now is around the antenna base on the roof is corroding.
Oh.
And the paint's peeling off of it. So I got to do something about that, which really sucks.
Is it leaking?
No, not leaking. Not as far as I know.
That's good.
We don't really get enough rain here for me to ever tell.
That's a fair point. We got a lot of rain this summer, but I've honestly been happy for that.
Yeah. No, the front range here has been like nice and
temperate.
Temperate. There we go. I think we've talked about this before. I've never seen Colorado this green.
Yeah, we've gotten so much rain, and honestly, it's kept us from experiencing the really negative impacts of the heat wave that's been hitting the rest of the West.
Right.
You know,
it's been pretty bad here sometimes, but honestly, it's not that bad. I mean, me of all people would know because I don't have actual central air conditioning right now because it's still broken.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just a little window unit and that evaporative cooler.
That cooler works pretty well.
Yeah, and we've managed to keep this place cool, so it hasn't been, like, too insane. We've had a few days, but I feel like that's most summers.
Yeah, but I mean, last summer it was dry and the sky turned red.
Yeah. And oh, God, that there was some days last summer that I was like, this is the apocalypse.
Well, and I felt so bad for you guys because at the time I was working in the office at Aspen and I'd go into the shop and it's you can smell the wildfire smoke.
Right.
And you guys are all pissed off. And I'm like, I don't blame you. It's like, I'm going to go back into the office now.
That was really like the end times shit. It's like, hey, there's a global pandemic that we might die from. And the sky is literally red now.
Yeah, the sky is red. It is the apocalypse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we actually did live through the apocalypse.
Which, hey, congratulations to us.
Yeah, right? We're the ones that got... What was that old Christian movie? Left Behind? I don't know if you ever had to watch that.
I don't know if I ever did.
So, I was never much of a religious kid, but... I hung out with some religious kids,
right.
So I got suckered into some lockdowns.
Yeah, you grew up in a church. Small town.
Yeah. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to hang out with my friends. I'm like, oh, no, this is propaganda.
This is a church lock.
Like, oh, no. But they had us watch this one where it's like about the, what's that called in the Christian Bible where all the Christians go to heaven?
Oh, the rapture?
Rapture. Thank you. And how everybody got left behind. And it was hilarious because in the movie... apparently nobody knew what the rapture was, so all the Christians disappeared and everybody else is going, we don't know what happened, this doesn't make any sense, why are my loved ones gone? Like, anybody with any sense is like, all the Christians are gone,
yeah,
we're here, oh fuck. This is the rapture.
It's like, shit, they were right, damn it.
But we're the people that got left behind in the rapture.
Yeah, which
makes sense.
Yeah, if the Christians got raptured and that means that housing prices can stabilize.
Can we just get some cheap houses,
I'll
please?
I'll stay here for the 7 years before the apocalypse actually happens.
Right, we'll have a great 7 years.
Yeah, we'll have a great 7 years. We'll have garage space. I mean, yeah, we can just spend the time racing. It'd be great.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, and honestly, we call our fans heretics. We're literally a religion of speed, which I think the Christian Bible is very against, like, worshiping other things.
Absolutely.
So
it's one of the Ten Commandments.
Right. Yeah, that's true. So if anybody's going to get left behind, it's definitely us.
Yeah. But that but then, we're then, with the more interesting people. I mean,
it's very true.
It's like all the best people have gone to hell. I mean,
right.
It's like I'd rather hang out with, Charles Darwin.
Right.
Then I can't even name anybody who would be.
We were talking about Joseph Smith earlier.
Hey, maybe Joseph Smith would have made it up there. It depends on whether or not Mormons guessed right, like in South Park.
Right.
In South Park, the Mormons were the only ones who guessed right.
Were they?
Yeah.
I don't remember that from that episode.
Yeah, they're all making macaroni art.
Oh.
It's a different episode. Like they go to
hell. I think I do remember that now, yeah.
And the only people who are in heaven are the Mormons. And in hell there's like luau's. And in heaven, it's just Mormons making macaroni and popsicle art.
Oh, South Park. I hope the creators do buy Casa Bonita.
I hope they do, too, because they can completely revitalize it.
If Casa Bonita opens up again and, shit, what are their names?
Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
Trey Parker and Matt Stone. If they buy it, we're having a religion of speed car meet there.
We should do it.
Yeah.
We should absolutely do it, and it would be so awesome if they were there and they made fun of us.
Yes.
I would love to see my likeness in construction paper.
Yeah, we just got to do something really dumb, and then we'll get made fun of on South Park.
Yeah, and then we're celebrities.
Yeah, like we were talking earlier, you know you've made it when you got made fun of on South Park.
When South Park makes fun of you, you're officially part of the cultural zeitgeist.
Yes. Maybe, see, that's how we do it. We don't get big sponsors and slowly get our name up there.
Yeah.
We do something really dumb and get our asses on South Park.
I think we could probably throw a Miata hard enough and get it through the window of a Casa Bonita.
How many people do you think it would take to toss a Miata through a Casa Bonita window? That's a math question I would like to answer.
No leverage, no fulcrums, no pulleys, just...
pure
just,
muscle.
Just people doing a squat.
That does kind of weirdly transition to something I did want to talk about today, too. On my walk, thinking about what I wanted for religion of speed and stuff, is I do want to do some sort of meetup, or we were talking about doing that morning cruise.
Yeah, the morning cruise would be great. Get out in the mountains and do some driving.
And it's, August now, so it's going to start to cool off a little bit here soon.
Yeah.
So we're not overheating cars going up in the mountains.
Yeah.
I've had that happen to the Fiesta before I replaced the radiator.
Oh, man.
Because you get up at that elevation, and there's just less air. Less air means less cooling.
Okay.
Because the air particles have to heat up through the radiator to take the air, the heat away.
I'll make sure to do a coolant flush before I take the 240 up to that altitude.
Right. I mean, you'll probably be fine. The only reason the Miata had trouble, or the Miata, the Fiesta. I've been saying Miata this whole time. What the fuck?
No, you said Fiesta.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jesus. The only reason the Fiesta had trouble is just because that first model year had issues with the radiator. Some of them did.
Yeah.
And I just happened to fall into that trap.
Oh, no.
So
okay.
I could have honestly just replaced it with like a 2015 radiator and been fine probably, but I went overkill and got the Mishimoto radiator.
If you're going to replace your radiator.
Right?
Yeah.
And it probably proved a welcome thing at Grid Life last weekend because it was hot.
It didn't hurt.
No, it certainly didn't. Anyways, I think we should sit down here maybe before next podcast, come up with some actual details on what we want that cruise to be.
Yeah, that'd be great. We should grab a beer and talk about it.
Yeah. It's going to be early. I know that for sure. We're getting there well before the cyclists. We're going to grab some breakfast. So if you're not a morning person, just stay up all night. It'll be fine.
It's okay. It'll just be part of the evening.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And you can go get some breakfast and go to sleep. That sounds like an amazing weekend.
Yeah. Well, we didn't have a lot of news to cover this time, and it was just kind of a Grid Life recap, which I'm happy to do because that weekend was awesome, and reliving that is something that I do not mind doing.
And honestly, we probably could go on for another couple hours about the stuff that happened there. We met the guys from Hoonigan.
Yeah. That K-Series S chassis made me want to build a K-Series S chassis.
Yeah, that was hilarious because I was, Hurt was there from Hoonigan.
Yeah.
You know, and he was hanging out with the K-Series booth with us. I just was like, I just told Hurt, I'm like, hey, can you pop the hood in your car? Because I want to show Huffman. I want to try to convince him that he needs to do this swap. Not that I actually really had to convince you.
It doesn't take much.
But but it was just, and once again, he was super cool. He was like, yeah, of course, man.
And he walked me through everything that he did the swap with, which until he told me that, I didn't realize that TF Works now makes a, you know, purpose-built
K-swap
kit for the S chassis.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Because most people until now, until recently, have been adapting the K-Miata kit.
And that's what I thought he had done.
Stuff. Yeah, but this was, I've looked online, it's about $1,900, comes with the mounting hardware and the oil pan.
That's not bad.
Yeah, there's a $4,000 kit that comes with clutch and flywheel.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know what transmission that's for. Now, I know Hurt was running the ZF, but
BMW
I know some
ZF.
People who get lucky enough or have enough money can track down an S2000 trans, and that's supposed to be just a butter smooth transmission.
And it bolts right up?
The S2K trans?
Yeah,
that's the one that Dai is running on the K20C1 swap.
Oh, I didn't realize it just bolted right up.
Yeah, well, I mean, they had to custom fab an adapter plate.
Okay.
But I think you need an adapter plate for the ZF trans, too.
Yeah.
But the S2000, it's a, you know, an FR transmission. So people like to run it when they can, but it's not like there's a lot of S2000s, let alone a lot of S2000 parts floating around.
Right,
so,
yeah.
But there's a ton of BMW ZF trans.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about. Because that even that J-swapped BRZ was running the ZF.
Yeah,
it?
And they're a dime a dozen, and they can hold a lot of torque.
Yep.
So that's what you're looking for. And you can get it in 5 or 6 speed.
Okay. Yeah, that's just there's so many options right there.
Yeah.
Thank you, BMW, for keeping the manual alive. If nothing else, just so that way we can have parts.
Thank you, BMW. Because you can still go to a dealership today. Buy an M car with a manual.
Right.
Even though you can't get a Supra with the same engine with a manual.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come on, Toyota.
You can get the 4-cylinder in a manual.
Can you?
I thought so.
I know that there was the 4-cylinder Z4 that in Europe you could get it with a manual.
Maybe I'm just talking shit. I don't know.
Well, I'm not. I mean, even
who
they
pays attention
that
to the 4-cylinder Supra?
Exactly. Exactly. Those people are probably going to buy BRZs or 86s anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just a weird car to even make. But
a 4-cylinder Supra. Yeah. When they make a 4-cylinder sports car.
Yeah.
That's also rear-wheel drive. It is weird.
Yeah.
What I'm told, if you do go automatic with it, it's the same 8-speed you get with the 6. So the gear ratios don't really favor the 4-cylinder very well. but I just want Toyota to offer a manual in it, even if it was overpriced. It would go on my dream car list.
Yeah.
I wouldn't buy a new one, but I'd certainly buy a used one down the road.
I'd buy one when they're cheap.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be, like with every car, there's going to be a period
where
those cars are cheap.
Yep.
It may be a small period because it seems like those that period for sports cars is getting narrower
the
and narrower.
Windows are narrowing, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like things just start to appreciate so quickly now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's wild to watch the market because the C4 Corvette has been cheap for like a decade.
Yeah.
And the C5 Corvette just now coming down, I think it's going to be really brief. Because as soon as the C5 Corvette hits $10,000, it becomes the go-to track car for everyone, and then the prices go back up.
Everybody's like, 350Zs, no, we're not right. doing that anymore.
Yeah, it's like factory LS.
Right.
You don't have to LS swap a Corvette, it's already done for you.
Maybe that'll bring down the price of 350Zs, though.
Maybe, but by then, they might be appreciated because they're older, like the Z32 is experiencing right now.
Do you think there's ever going to be a collector's market for... what the fuck am I talking about? Of course, there's going to be a collector's market for 350Zs.
Yeah, DK drove it.
Yeah.
Yeah, in Tokyo Drift. Yeah.
It just... In my mind, the 350Z is the least desirable Z.
Right. In our minds.
In my mind.
Because it's...
Like, I would...
I'm saying the mind of people our age.
Right.
Because it's the most ubiquitous Z, and it has been for our whole life.
Right.
But I think, honestly, by the time the Corvettes... hit 10,000, the 370s are going to be cheap.
I would be fine with that.
Yeah.
Because the 370 is just 350Z better in every single way.
Right. It's just it's a better looking, faster Z. It's got the more technology in the VQ37.
Yep. It's got a nicer interior.
Yeah. And I know people love to hate on the lights, headlights and taillights, but I like the angled boomerang lights on all four corners.
I didn't like them in pictures. If you've only ever seen, well, I guess... I'm sure you've seen a 350Z or 370Z in person by now, but like when I first saw them in pictures, I didn't like it, but on the car, it looks good.
Yeah, it follows the body lines really well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm interested to see what the new Z does to those prices.
Right.
I think it'll bring them down. I do think by the time the C5 Corvette hits 10 grand that the 350Z will have started to appreciate because if nothing else, it'll be the drift tax.
Right.
That brings it up. Like right now... You used to be able to get an E36 or E46 3 Series dirt cheap.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that anymore.
No, you can't.
Because everybody drifts them. And that has pushed up the prices of the M's.
Yeah.
Which makes me sad. Because they were already expensive.
Yeah.
Now, if I want a clean E46 M3, I'm going to pay $40,000. And you want, you know, a clean base model 3 Series is approaching 10.
So, I was thinking about this the other day of what the next... I was just trying to think of what the next, like, cheap drift car is going to be. And I think, like, the Mustangs, the, like, retro Mustangs.
Like the 2005 body.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't think about that.
I think those are starting to really plummet in price.
Yeah, because the SN95s are starting to see appreciation.
They are.
Which I never thought I'd say.
No. Those things were the joke of the Mustang world for the entire time they existed,
yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah, when they were new.
Right.
Like, they were a joke.
Yeah.
And then the retro one came out, and everybody was just happy to forsake them.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is, the reason I think that's going to be cheap is because when that came out, everybody loved that car, and they sold a dick ton of them.
There are a lot of those.
And granted, there's probably a lot of V6s out there.
Yeah.
But we can swap those.
Right, right. And, you know, the V8s will go first.
Yeah.
The V6s will come in, the convertibles.
Right.
You know, they'll be at the bottom of the market. We'll see a bunch of caged convertibles.
Right. And with all these, I know this is going to sound really weird, but that J-swap.
Oh!
Got me thinking. Because the V6 that Mustang came with was garbage.
Yeah, it had no power.
Yeah, the new V6 Mustangs, those are actually pretty quick.
Yeah,
honestly.
They've got more power than the V8s of that generation.
Right? Yeah, but the V6 it came with was just not good. But can you imagine a turbo J-series swapped Mustang?
Yeah, I mean, it would piss off all the right people.
It'd piss off everybody, yeah, for sure.
But, I mean, that J-series motor is nothing to sneeze at.
Right.
Like, watching the way it performed at Grid Life, it's like, okay. And I didn't even know while we were watching it that they had restricted the power of that.
Yeah.
To fit in the class.
Yeah, it was an NA motor. They restricted the power.
And it was still outgunning a VQ37.
Which I'm sure that had restriction. It had to have a restrictor plate, too.
On the Z?
Had to have.
Yeah, most likely.
You know.
But still ludicrously impressive.
Yeah.
And those J-series motors are out there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of them. And people have been swapping them for a while, but...
Not that much,
though. They made a lot of Honda Odysseys.
Yeah. It's the same argument of when, you know, the LS swap became popular. Like, oh, they made so many LSs, they'll always be cheap.
Right.
But then everybody started using them.
And
so,
now it's a $10,000 swap.
Right. So part of me does want to get a storage unit just to keep engines in.
Just to fill in the spec. I mean, hey, it'd be cool just to have a bunch of engines.
Right, exactly.
It's not like we're not going to be blowing them up.
Right.
You know, I'd honestly, it'd be really cool if I could J-swap my 240. I'd be really happy with that.
That'd be a nice drivetrain in that.
Yeah, I think it'd be fun. It'd be lightweight. Honestly, I'd probably still be lighter than my cast iron four-cylinder.
Yeah, probably would be because it's all aluminum.
Yeah.
It'd be more compact.
And you can get one out of an Accord or a TL or an Odyssey.
Or a Pilot.
The Pilots.
Or an MDX.
What did the Ridgelines have?
The V6.
Okay, so...
Because the Ridgeline's just a Pilot.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So there's a lot of those out there.
Right?
Yeah, and, you know, people have been swapping them into Civics, which, you know, there's always a lot of swaps with Civics.
Mm-hmm.
But once you take a Honda motor and you transition it out of the Honda...
Yeah.
Like what's happened with the K-Series.
Ooh, K-Series swap Mustang.
That could work. That'd piss off even more people.
That would. Yeah. A four-cylinder Mustang.
Yeah. And there'd probably be a kit for it.
We could make something work.
Yeah.
It's a giant engine bay. There's no way that engine won't fit.
We're going to put it somewhere.
Right? But yeah, I was just thinking about speculating on engines and going down to the pick and pull and just... Any VQ, any 1J or 2J that I see,
yep.
Any V6 Honda.
Any Nissan V8, the VKs. I like those.
I like those too. I don't think there's a big market for them.
Yeah, I mean, right now, it doesn't make sense to swap one instead of an LS.
Yeah.
But I feel like as the LS increases in price, people will start looking at other V8s. And I don't know if the Nissan VK will understandably be the next one,
but yeah.
Maybe it will. You never know. I mean, because you've got to look at its competition. I mean, we've got the Coyote Ford motor,
yep,
which I've seen people swap that, but those aren't very common.
No, they're pretty expensive still.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't think they weren't used in a lot of models. They were obviously in the Mustang,
but yeah.
The Nissan VK was in the Armada and the Titan.
Yeah,
so
and the Pathfinder.
So we've got a fair amount of
the
those.
M56.
I always forget about the M56.
Everybody forgets the M56. That thing is like a sleeper car for sure. I want one because they're not that expensive because nobody really knew they existed.
Yeah, and it's a ton of power for a sedan.
Yeah.
Yeah, those motors are brutish, and I would...
They sound so good, too.
Yeah, they do, even with a factory exhaust.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a rumble to them.
They do, yeah.
Yeah, so I'd be really excited to see those go up, but I just don't know what the next hot V8 is.
Yeah.
Because obviously, K is taking the next hot 4.
Yep.
And I think you're right that the J is going to be the next hot 6 because nobody builds an engine like Honda builds an engine.
Right.
They build the best NA4s in the world.
And you know how hard it is to actually get power out of a VQ.
Like to actually, yeah, to make more power than factory. Yeah. Yeah. It's not easy.
Yeah. Because you can boost it, but they don't really take the boost all that well.
Yeah. They're so high compression.
The rods just don't like it either. You know, so then you have to build the whole engine. If you want more NA power, it's just kind of hard to get more NA power out of them.
Yeah.
So, but the J series seems to take the boost like a champ.
Yeah, they seem to be fine.
Yeah.
And NA, they're putting out VQ levels of power.
Yeah.
So if you're happy with your 350 horsepower swap, you're going to pay less for a J series than you are for a VQ.
Right.
There's more J series out there.
Well, I don't know. There's a lot of VQs out there.
There's a lot, but I don't know. You think there's... I'd be interested to see what's more. I think there's more J-Series because the VQ was never in a minivan.
Yeah, it was.
Was it?
The Quest.
Did the Quest have a VQ35?
Yeah.
Well, I stand corrected.
Yeah, because the Quest, the Maxima, the Murano.
Right.
The Altima.
Yep.
God, was that it? And then, of course, the Z. And then the G and the M. And, then the VQ40 was in the trucks.
The Frontiers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But nobody uses the VQ40 for some reason.
I think they have timing chain issues.
They all have timing chain issues. It's easily corrected. It's fine. Don't worry about it. So there's a lot of VQs out there, too.
So I wonder what there's more of, though.
Yeah.
A Honda J series versus the Nissan VQ. That would actually be a great segment. We should do something like that.
Right.
We could go head to head with those motors.
Yeah.
And see which one's better.
Yeah. I mean, off the top of my head, I'm a fan of the VQ. But that J series is just, it's so nice and compact and simple. Still has a timing belt.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just more prone to the J series because I make a lot of money doing timing belts and valve adjusts on them. Which the J series, yeah, still has manually adjusted valves.
Oh, okay.
Doesn't have hydraulic lash adjusters.
So that means you have to adjust them.
Mm-hmm. About every 100K, you have to adjust them.
Okay. But, I mean, you're going to do timing cover service on a VQ about every 100K.
Right.
And that's expensive.
Yeah. So, I don't know. That is a good question. I don't know which side I would be on that.
Yeah. We should do that. We should delve more into that.
Right.
Because I think those are going to be the next two big V6s.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if more people start running V6s just as LSs kind of dry up.
Yeah, there's not as many LSs. And as far as the V8 swap, you know, what's Toyota's modern V8? The one in the Tundra.
I don't know what the designation is on that engine anymore.
Yeah, I don't know how swappable that one is.
Probably not. The problem with truck engines a lot of time is they're just too tall.
Because they sit in large engine bays.
Right. So they usually put like really tall oil pans and stuff on them, which is fixable, of course. You can make shorter oil pans, but then somebody's either got to custom fab it or, you know, you have to make a kit for it or something like that. And
right.
So those aren't as desirable. The reason the LS is always so popular is just because it's so compact.
Yeah. It's a short engine.
It's a short engine. So small. When you have one cam and it's in the block, you can make your engine so small.
And it's not like anybody's building, you know, new pushrod engines like that. You know,
Ford is.
Is Ford building a new pushrod?
They have some big, giant truck V8 that's a cam and block motor.
Really?
Yeah.
That's wild. The LS was so successful.
That Ford went away from overhead cams.
Ford backtracked.
Yeah.
That's insane.
It's weird. It's only in the big trucks. It's for like the heavy-duty trucks.
I wonder what that's about.
I don't know. I think they were calling, if I remember correctly, they were calling that engine the Godzilla engine, which I have issues with.
Yeah, there's a few issues with that.
I mean, one, it's American.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Maybe call it the King Kong engine. That would be fine with that.
Oh my God, they should call it the King Kong engine.
Right?
Yeah, they should call it the Kong block.
That doesn't have a good ring to it. Yeah. But yeah, no, it was just crazy that I think it was like a 7.2 liter or something gas engine. It was a monster.
So it's going to be in like their F-250 and 350?
Yeah. I think they're making it already.
Interesting. I had no idea anybody was developing something like that.
Yeah. It's got to be the last like cam and block engine that's going to be developed ever.
I bet GM is pissed about that too.
Right. They're like, no, we were supposed to be the last holding on to this technology.
Yeah.
Because I don't see GM holding, like, they're just going to keep iterating on the LS platform.
Right.
I mean, look how long the fucking Chevy 350 lasted.
Yeah. And the LS came straight out of that.
Right.
So they're just, yeah, they're going to keep doing it. And it's so swappable now. They have no reason to stop making it.
Right.
I mean, you can buy new crate motors from them.
Yeah, right, yeah. From GM.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't think they're going to put any development into a new V8 because they're just going to move everything to electric now.
Yeah.
So
it's just going to be LS until the end.
Yep. LS until the end. That's the world right now.
Yep.
LS until the end.
LS until the end.
Speaking of the end, let's end this, man.
Yep. It's been a lot of fun.
As always.
Yeah.
But, yeah, as always, if you want to keep up to date with what we're doing, follow Religion of Speed on Instagram, Facebook, religionofspeed.co. You can check us out on YouTube, youtube.com/religionofspeed, I believe, unless they got that weird URL right now.
I think that's the current URL.
Yeah, sometimes YouTube can be strange.
I'm subscribed, so I just click. I never type in the slash.
Yeah, there you go. Just find us on YouTube, subscribe, hit the bell icon, because you got to do that now to make sure you know when we release videos.
Yep.
Which isn't that often, so you might miss it. So
right.
Be sure to hit that bell. And as always, subscribe to us and wherever you get your podcasts, so that way you can always listen to our beautiful voices whenever a new podcast comes out.
We do have beautiful voices.
Right. Perfect. We have the voices for radio and the faces for TV. It's a very rare combo. Usually it's this one or the other.
And so much humility.
Oh, man. I want to thank the band Wheels for letting us use their song Colors off the album Traveler Part 1. You can find them at wheelstheband.bandcamp.com. And until next time, everybody, peace.